compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okie dokie karaoke. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thanks for listening. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Here's a question that came in from Sherry. She emailed me. She says, "Hi, Patrick. I'd like your opinion on the website Countdown to the Kingdom. Is it church approved? What do you think of the seers? And what do you think, and do you think we are in the end times? If it's church approved, why isn't the church talking about it? Why don't we hear about it at Mass? Why we became aware of it when somebody in the family recently stumbled on it and started telling everyone she knows to prepare because the end is coming soon. It's caused an uproar in our family, not the least because it advises against getting a COVID shot. Any information you could provide would be greatly appreciated. Thank you." Well, thank you, Sherry. I don't like to have to offer a critique of an organization if I can avoid doing so. And usually I will just ignore it and let people make up their own minds on these matters. But your question is similar to quite a few others that I've received in the last, 6 to 8 months of people whose reaction to what they see at that website is causing them a great deal of anxiety, tension, fear, problems in the family. I've heard this enough times now that I feel maybe a bit of an obligation to say a few words about it. So I will say this. I don't know anyone involved with that other than one fellow who's involved with it. His name is Mark Mallett. I think Mark Mallett is a fine guy. I've met him and his family before. They came with their camper and they were traveling through Ohio. This is years ago. And they stayed at our house and it was fun to get to know them. And we had dinner and the kids played and it was nice. And I really do like Mark a lot. I think he's very talented. And I haven't seen Mark in all those years since then. So I don't have any kind of like ongoing connection with him, and I can't remember the last time he and I have ever communicated since then. But my interaction with him then was quite good, and I like him. But I am concerned by some of the things that I've been seeing, and some of the things involve people getting extremely distraught. I don't think distraught is too big of a word to describe how they become deeply fearful and anxious. And so my reaction to this would be that I would avoid it. It is not church approved. And by that, what I mean is the church has not given an imprimatur to that website. The church doesn't give imprimaturs to websites in any case. The church doesn't formally approve, my website. The church doesn't formally approve, any website. Imprimatur, if you want to use that term, it's a Latin phrase that means let it be printed. That is something that canon law requires for certain kinds of books on Catholic themes. Some books require the imprimatur. That's the bishop's approval saying it can be printed, let it be printed. It's not an endorsement of the book, by the way. So if a book carries an imprimatur, it doesn't mean the bishop is endorsing it. It just means that he's saying that it can be printed. Similarly, there's what's known as the nihil obstat, which means nothing stands in the way. And that's usually what the censor of the diocese would issue as a kind of a certification that there's nothing in this book that would prevent it from being published and circulated. But there too, it's not an endorsement of the book. It's just simply saying, we've checked it out. There's nothing here that's egregious, so it can be printed. The church doesn't do that. Bishops don't do that for websites. So that would be, I think, an answer to your question. There's no issue here about whether it's church approved or not approved. It's just simply the work of the people who are involved in it. And as I can see from looking at it, it is they're pulling together the claims that are made by a variety of different alleged seers. None of whom, by the way, unless memory fails me, I don't remember seeing among the list of the people that they tout as being seers, I don't recall any of them being approved by their local bishop or approved by the church at some higher level. Now, if I'm incorrect on that statement, I'm happy to be corrected, but I don't recall seeing any of these so-called seers who have any kind of official approbation from the church. So that's another area of concern, because you've got a very popular website now that is purveying for an avidly interested audience these claims to prophecies and locutions and revelations from alleged seers who may very well not be seeing anything beyond their own imagination. And we don't know yet. And it seems highly likely to me that most of the people who come forward and tout themselves as seers are probably not really seeing anything beyond their own imagination. So my advice would be, because this problem seems to happen over and over again, I'm seeing it happen more and more often, and you yourself just sent me this email asking me the same question, Sherry. It's causing an uproar in your family, and people are getting anxious, and all of the things that go into that, I would just say, just avoid it. Avoid it, you know? And that's not an attack on anybody who's involved with it. I'm sure that they have genuine motives. I'm not calling into question their motives. I don't have any reason to do so. But the net effect seems to be deleterious on many people. And another dimension of all this is the tendency on the part of some people. And I know some of these people. I know some of them personally. And some of them may be listening to this program right now. So I don't want to say anything that would be hurtful to them. But I know some people who hang on every word that they get out of this website. And one of the things I pointed out to at least one of these people I know is that many of these same claims, God has told me that the world is about to end, the world is about to change, God shared with me, God gave me a word of knowledge, God told me that this is happening, God, and I am aware of, in some cases, some of the people involved here who have been saying this for well over 20 years. The same kind of things going back 10, 15, 20 years ago. And it didn't happen then, and it didn't happen the next time, it didn't happen the next time, it didn't happen the next time. And now here we are 15, 20 years later, and it still hasn't happened. This is one of the dangers of the end times mania kind of outlets and books and websites and things. You have to be very careful with this, because there are a lot of people who are fearful right now. And they're searching for answers. They're trying to make sense of the weirdness that's going on right now. What's going on in the Catholic Church? Why are these weird things happening? Is Joe Biden the Antichrist? I've heard people wonder about that. Is the COVID vaccine, is it the mark of the beast? I've heard people say that. And in a situation where you're fearful and somebody pops up and says, here, let me explain it to you. Let me explain to you why these things are happening. And here's what you need to know. And if you listen to this podcast or buy my book or, you know, support us so you get your premium membership stuff, we'll tell you even more of the specific secrets. It's just not going to do you any good. And let me say one more thing. I don't believe that a great deal of what's being purveyed on websites like that is true. I believe much of it comes from the fevered imaginations of the alleged seers who are claiming to be receiving messages from God. And this has been going on a long time, so this is nothing new. I don't believe that most of that is true. I think it's, as I said earlier, from the imaginations of the people involved. God bless them, you know? I don't know them, so it's between them and God, but I know the negative effects that it's having on people. But let's just say, for the sake of discussion, just for a minute here, let's just say that the things that they're saying are real, or that are really happening, let's say that some of those things are really happening. So what do you do then? I just want to make sure I'm really clear on this. I'm not saying that they are. I'm just saying, what if, hypothetically, what if? You should do the same thing whether it's true or not true. In other words, love God with all your heart, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Be a good wife, be a good husband, be a good mom, be a good dad. Say your prayers, take care of the work that God has for you to do according to your station in life. Receive the sacraments, pray, give alms, love your fellow man, help and do all the things that you're called to do. And if you're doing those things, it doesn't matter if the Antichrist is opening an office down the street from you. It's not going to change anything. And you're having a steady diet of the doom and gloom and the fear-mongering and those things. If anything, it's going to distract you from the things that you really should be doing. And that's one of the dangers here, is that there are people who are getting now so wound up about this and so fearful and so agitated that they're losing their grip on what they should really be doing. And that, to me, seems like the right out of the playbook of the evil one. If he wants to get Christians who are followers of Jesus to do something other than follow Jesus, well, I know, how about if we get them all whipped into a frenzy about the Antichrist and all these other problems that they can't control anyway? So that's my advice, Sherry. I would just ignore it. Just detox from it. And if you have family members who won't detox from it, I don't know what to say for them, but for you, just steer clear of it. Live your life, love God and all the other things. And then if it happens that we're living in the end times, I don't know if we're living in the end times. Sometimes I wonder if we are. And we might be, I guess, but I would look at it this way. If we're living in the end times, okay, we're living in the end times. This is what God wants for us. Some generation has to be that generation. Could be this generation. Maybe it's not. And you know, just looking at the past 2,000 years and all the times that people thought, oh my gosh, this is it. This is the end. We're living in the end. Jesus is about to come. And then it didn't happen. And they all passed away and generations after generations followed them. So there have been many generations since the time of Christ that were convinced that this was the end. This is it. And it wasn't it. The end is sometime in the future. So I would offer you that as well. If we're living in the end times, all right, fine. Thank you, Jesus. Praise God. We're living in the end times. Because for us, that's what God wants. If we're not living in the end times, okay. We're not living in the end times. Sooner or later, you and I and everyone will have his own end time when death comes. That's what we should be preparing for. And that's why I fear that people who get so wound up in this end times mania, that they're not going to be attending to the things that really matter. Well, those are my thoughts. 888-914-9149. Thanks for writing to me, Sherry. I appreciate it. Cyrus, let's see who we have next on deck. Let's go to Dale in Shoreview, Minnesota. Good morning, Dale.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'll just say quickly that this involves a skipping of the offertory prayer preceding the preface.
Okay.
And a little background. It's a retired priest who fills in occasionally at a parish that I go to daily mass at. So it's at the daily mass. I'm not a member of that parish.
Mm-hmm.
And I did approach him and asked him, I said, I noticed that you're skipping that offertory prayer. And he says, yes, and something I've been doing for decades. And I said, well, I don't remember exactly how the conversation went, but that's illicit. And he says, and I said, so you've been saying an illicit mass for decades. And he says, well, we don't want to get legalistic about it. And he made some comment about, well, the real prayer is the Eucharist. And
Sure people understand what you're saying. So when he says, for example, lift up your hearts, we have lifted them up to the Lord, all those parts of the preface, he's omitting those. Is that right?
The prayer before, we're bringing this offering to you, Lord. That's the offertory prayer preceding the preface.
Oh, preceding the preface.
Every day
okay.
Changes mm-hmm. slightly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's based on, if there's a saint of the day, it talks about the saint of the day. Or
right. I got it.
So my question, I guess, is there... I don't believe it's an optional prayer. At least when I spoke to my priest, he said, no, it's not optional.
Right.
so I'm wondering where to go, if anywhere, with this from this point. As I said, I'm not a member of the parish, and I don't know that the pastor knows any idea that how the priest is presenting the Mass.
Well, that's a matter that if he's celebrating the Mass illicitly and knowingly so, that's something that his bishop would have the authority to correct. But I don't know, I don't know how far you want to pursue this, but if you wanted to, I would say if you've already talked to the priest and he just says, I'm not going to do it, and I haven't been doing it for all these years, then the only thing I can think of would be that you would write to his bishop and let him know this. That may or may not do anything. But beyond that, I'm not sure what else you can do other than pray for the poor man and ask God to bring him to his senses.
Yeah, but, I don't think he's going to change his mind. Unless the Lord really works on him, He's been back a couple times since then and has, continued in the same pattern.
Yeah. It's not your parish, right? This is just a place you visit from time to time?
Yeah, it's a parish nearby that I go to daily Mass at.
Well, I mean, you could do this. Obviously, it's in the same diocese as yours, so if you wanted to write a letter to, what you could do, if you want to push the point, you could write a letter to the priest and just say, Father, just to follow up on our earlier conversation, it pains me that you're not saying the Mass as it's supposed to be said, and you had told me that you haven't done so for years, and I just want to encourage you to do it the right way, and so on. See what he says. Maybe he'll ignore you. Maybe he'll respond. If you don't get a response that you think is sufficient, then you can just forward that letter that you sent him to the bishop and just say, just wanted you to be aware, Bishop, that the priest is doing this. And then beyond that, I'm not sure what else you can do. Just wish him well and pray for him. That'd be my recommendation. I appreciate the call. Thank you, Dale. 888-914-9149. This came in on Twitter. John Dubay on Twitter says, Patrick, the sister in a house with her brother and his girlfriend said she was aware of the girlfriend a month before closing. I doubt ruining her relationship with her brother is appropriate. If the house and mortgage are in her name, she can ask them to leave. Well, it's not so easy, John. She said she became aware of it a month before they closed, but it sounds as though the train was already moving too fast for her to stop it. So, yeah, in retrospect, sure, if she had done something then, that would be different. She could have pulled out and maybe nothing would have happened. But she's not the one ruining the relationship. He is. And my advice to her was that she can just simply be a thorn in his side and remind him of the things that he's doing to the point where he won't want to live there with her anymore, and he might be willing to make a change, which is what she wants. And also, the mortgage is in both their names. So the bills are in her name, which was a strategic mistake, as she and I discussed, but the mortgage, as I understand it, is in her name and her brother's name. So she can't ask him to leave. Oh, well, I shouldn't say that. She can ask him to leave, but she doesn't have the legal right to make him leave. So that's the uniqueness of this situation. And I think it's entirely appropriate for her to push back against her brother because he's abusing the relationship. Thanks for the message on Twitter. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Chicago and talk to Cindy. Good morning, Cindy.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for your show.
Sure.
I just wondered, we were talking about the Trinity earlier, and I wondered why in the creed that it said that Jesus sits now at the right hand of the Father, almost as if they are not the same person. And
right.
I'm going to hang up so I could hear your response. So I could put
you don't have to hang up. Why do you need to hang up? Can't we just talk on the phone like this?
Well, I wanted my grandson to hear you too.
Oh, I see. Okay, fair enough. Okay, good. Well, this term, sitting at the right hand, is a term that's used to describe power and authority. And so you may remember in the Gospels where the mother of James and John, the sons of Zebedee, she asks Jesus for him to give her sons the privilege of sitting at his right hand and left hand in the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus says, well, that's not a privilege that I'm going to be granting to them. And that's a way of saying that they would be sort of like second in command, that they would be sitting at your immediate right and immediate left. So sitting at somebody's right hand is a way of saying that you are the closest, the most important after the person, the king, let's say, whose hand you're sitting at. Now, God does not have hands and feet and a body. God is a pure spirit. So it's a figure of speech in human terms. Now, we see Saint Stephen in the book of Acts, who says the same thing. So he sees Jesus, he says, sitting at the right hand of the Father in heaven. And this, of course, was further infuriating the Jewish leaders, because they did not want any talk about Jesus. They certainly didn't want any talk about Jesus being God. So when Saint Stephen in Acts chapter 7 said that, you know, the heavens have been opened and I can see Jesus sitting at the right hand of God, that for them was just too much. So if you read that, read in Acts chapter 7, read this, you see that this is a way of describing Jesus in power and glory. Now, to see that in the heavens would be something that we could understand. In this earthly life, we can't really understand the realities of heaven. St. Paul said so. Apparently, he got a glimpse of it. And he said, "Eye has not seen nor has ear heard those things that God has prepared for those who love him." So he was unable to really articulate what it was that he saw. He couldn't do it. He didn't have words for it. So we do the best we can, and we use that phrase as a way to denote that Christ has that power. He's the Son of God, etc. Does that help clarify it a little bit more, Cindy?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, I'm happy to. 888-914-9149. We'll take a break and come back with your phone calls right after this. We have some lines open. This would be the perfect time to call, 888-914-9149. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I like that aggressive bass, Cyrus. That's good. That's a vibe for the show. What's this one?
This is Red Hot Chili Peppers, Dark Necessities.
Okay.
So we just like the music. We're not promoting the band.
There you go. That's good that you said that. Because somebody would say, wait a minute. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to James in Golden, Colorado. Hi, James.
Yeah, hello, Patrick. Hello. Patrick, I got a question. Maybe I've always wondered this. Why do the popes, and even some of the saints, Saint Maria Faustina, her original name was Helen Kowalska, and the Pope Francis, his original name was Ratzinger, why do they take on different names other than their original? Is there some traditional thing I'm missing here?
Probably, yeah. So Pope Francis's name is Jorge Bergoglio. I think you're thinking of the former Pope Benedict the 16th. Yeah, so he was Joseph Ratzinger.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. But what is behind the name change, though? I mean, why do they pick a name other than their original name?
Okay. So in the case of a religious sister, so like St. Faustina, It's the custom in religious orders to take a name in religion, so you no longer use your given name, and so religious orders tend to have names that are common to that order. So, like say the Dominicans, there are lots and lots of Dominican friars named Jordan, even though there wasn't. That's not the name of the man. It's the name that he took in religion, Dominic and Raymond and. and other names that they take are from great Dominican saints. Dominic is another very common one, for example. So you would find something similar among the Franciscans and other orders that tend to do that. And most of them do. Now, there are orders like the Jesuits that don't take a new name. It's not part of their constitution. The reason for doing it is to show a kind of decisive break with the world, that you have turned your back on the world. Not that you hate your name or you don't like your family or anything like that, but by adopting a new name, you're focusing on your commitment to the evangelical councils of poverty, chastity, and obedience, and living your faith in that community life. And then taking that name is a way of associating yourself with the heroic virtues of that saint. It becomes a patron for you, somebody that you are seeking to model your life after. Now, often, at least until recent times, you didn't have a choice in the name that you were given. You were assigned that name in religious life. And as I understand it, in more recent years, the religious orders have made it much more collaborative, where the religious sister who's going to take her vows, or the monk who's going to take his vows, they have a say in it, and they might even be able to choose from a variety of names which one that they want. But either way, that's what it's done for. It's a way to show that separation from the world and from one's past life and the focus on the life of a religious. Does that help?
Okay. Yeah, sure does. Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. I imagine this has been going on for forever, basically ever since the beginning of the church, correct?
No, not since the beginning of the church. This is a monastic custom that developed early on, but it didn't develop right away. So you don't really see, I mean, the apostles did not take new names. Jesus gave Simon a new name. He named him Peter, Rock, but that was unique. So the other apostles did not have name changes. And you don't really see that beginning until the rise of the desert fathers, the desert hermits, when religious life in monasteries, out in the deserts especially, when that began to rise and become very common, some of these customs that entered into the rule that they would live by, that's where you begin to see it. But it doesn't go all the way back, but it does go quite a ways back. I hope that helps, and I appreciate the call. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Bernie in Greendale, Wisconsin. Hi, Bernie.
Hi there. How are you? I'm listening to you always every morning, Saturday, Sunday morning.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Sure.
I am a baptized Catholic. I can earn my way to heaven. But what about the Buddhists and the Sikhs? They don't believe in our God. How do they earn their way to heaven?
Well, let's start there. Nobody can earn his way to heaven. You can't. The Buddhists can't. The Hare Krishnas can't. Nobody can. There's no way to earn your salvation. In fact, that's a heresy known as Pelagianism, or at least that's one variant of that. So the only way that you can be saved is through Jesus Christ. He's our Savior. If we could earn our way to salvation, there would have been no need for Jesus. Think about that for a minute. If you had the power to earn your salvation, then why would Jesus need to come and save us by dying on the cross? It would be superfluous at best. So the actual truth is that you and I are incapable of saving ourselves, and this is why faith in Jesus as our Messiah and Redeemer is what's necessary. So what about the Buddhists? Well, everybody is called to faith in Jesus, and Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Jesus reminded us frequently that he is the way of salvation. So that's why the church has her missionary mission, and that is to tell everybody in the whole world about Jesus in hopes that they will accept him, and God will give them the grace to do so. Not everybody will, but God gives them sufficient grace to do that. So that's why the church preaches the gospel all around the world, inviting people to faith in Jesus. Now, what about people who don't know Jesus, and it's not their own fault? Maybe because of when and where they lived, and it wasn't possible for them to know about Jesus. Well, the church also says that Jesus has a way to save them that we don't know about. we do know about his plan that involves baptism and coming into the church. That's what he said to the apostles in Matthew 28, when he said in the Great Commission, go into the whole world, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them, etc. So that's the norm that we're obliged to follow if we possibly can. But in the cases of those who are not responsible for not being able to do that, the church says that God is sovereign, and in his mercy, he can grant salvation to them. But it would also not be outside the church. It would be in some way connected to the church, but it's in a way that's unknown to us because God hasn't revealed it to us. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It's just, I've been watching some programs, and I saw some Buddhists and so forth, and it seems such good people. And I'm saying they have a right but they don't know about our God. They have their own God, and that's why I was concerned.
Well, here's the thing to remember, too. Buddhists don't really have their own God either. Buddhists believe that everything that we think of around us is an illusion. Your pain is an illusion. Really, death and all the things associated with this life are really an illusion. So the philosophy of Buddhism does not seek to worship God as such, but it seeks to empty oneself of these illusions. And then in death, after reincarnation, who knows how many different times, to achieve a state of perfect self-actualization, perfect unity with the void out there. So their understanding of faith and what we would think of as God is very different from us. They don't worship a God the way you and I do. That's just one of the features of Buddhism that many people may not be familiar with, but it's not the same thing as Christianity. And for that matter, I'll leave you with this thought, is that unlike all the other world religions, unlike Islam, unlike Judaism, unlike Buddhism, for example, and in even Hinduism too, because Hinduism it has a pantheon of countless gods that they believe are out there. Unique among all the world religions is Christianity, in that the founder of Christianity, Jesus Christ, he claimed to be God himself, the one true God. None of those other religious leaders did that. So there's something unique about the claims of Jesus that need to be reckoned with. They need to be confronted and considered. And I believe that the evidence is overwhelming that Jesus is who he claimed to be. He claimed to be God. He rose from the dead as evidence of that. There were eyewitnesses to this who were willing to die terrible, painful deaths rather than recant what they knew to be true. I was having this conversation just the other day with somebody, and she was saying, well, you know, I just don't think there's any evidence that Jesus is God. What's the evidence that he's God? And this lady was a Catholic, believe it or not. And I said, well, what do you mean there's no evidence? The resurrection. She said, yeah, but I mean, how do we know that really happened? I said, well, here's one way that we know that really happened. We have the hostile third-party witnesses, the testimony of some Jewish writers and some pagan writers at the time of the apostles. So they were contemporaries or near contemporaries, and they talk about how the followers of Jesus believed that he rose from the dead. Now, that's not proof of the resurrection per se, but that corroborates the claims that are made in the Gospels about Jesus rising from the dead. But here's where it gets really interesting, is what I told her. I said, how do you explain the fact that you've got hundreds and thousands of people who were alive at the time of Jesus? They saw him, they knew him, they talked to him before his death on the cross, and they saw him, or at least they claimed to see him, resurrected. And the lady said, okay, what of it? I said, well, think about this. We have thousands of people. We're told in the Bible that there was one instance where Jesus appeared to 500 people at one time after his resurrection. And that was just one of the many instances in which he appeared to people. So we can safely say that thousands of people saw Jesus risen from the dead, the same Jesus that they knew before his crucifixion. So where it gets really interesting is, how do you explain, I asked her, the fact that these people who began very quickly to be persecuted by the Jews and not long after that by the Romans, who were trying to stamp out this belief in Jesus as divine, this belief in Jesus as resurrected, and they were not willing to recant what they saw. Now, if it were a hoax, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead and it was just a scam, well, these people would have known it was a scam. And what would be in it for them? Why would they be willing to die? I mean, would you be willing to die? I didn't say this to the lady, but I'll ask you right now, just rhetorically. Cyrus, if you knew that Papa Smurf wasn't real, and you were going around telling people, well, Papa Smurf's actually, I saw him, I talked to him, I had lunch with him, Papa Smurf is real. And let's say the government cracked down on Papa Smurfism and said, Cyrus, first time we're going to fine you if you keep it up with the Papa Smurf stuff. Second time, we're going to put you in jail. And if you keep it up, we're going to kill you. Would you continue talking to people about a fictitious character named Papa Smurf if you knew that he didn't really exist?
Serious question?
Serious question.
No.
No. Now, it sounds kind of silly when you put it that way, but just think of how silly it would have been for them if Jesus hadn't really risen from the dead. So that's the question then. Why would they be willing to die for something that they knew was a hoax, if it was a hoax? And that's the thing. It wasn't a hoax. You might be able to find one person who's deranged enough who might be willing to do that for whatever reason, but can you honestly say you can find hundreds and thousands of people who would be willing to die as martyrs rather than say, no, it was all really a hoax. It was a scam. It didn't really happen. Let me go. Not going to do it.
Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture.
Wouldn't be prudent. It's not prudent to give up your life for something you know that it's a lie. Etc., etc. I think the lady, by the time we were done conversing, I think she had some food for thought. I think it made more sense to her. Well, we are at another juncture where we have to take a break, so we'll do that and come back with more of your phone calls. 888-914-9149. It would be prudent at this juncture to take a break. I'll be right back.
Smurf the whole day long. Smurf along with me.
The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
We'll go back to the phones right away. Let's go to Alex in California. Hi, Alex. Welcome.
Hello, Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning.
So my question was, me and my wife, we got invited by some friends to a baptism. We looked up the address and we noticed it wasn't going to be at a Catholic church. And then we remember occasionally there's a so-called bishop or priest that comes from out of town to do the sacraments, baptisms, confirmations, and first communions. So my question is, how can I go about this? Should I contact the diocese? Should I let my friend know, or should I confront the priest and let my friend know at the event? So I'm kind of, I need your advice here.
Okay. This could be benign. It could be a visiting bishop who has family or friends in that area, and he's a bona fide actual Catholic bishop and has, let the local bishop know that he'll be doing this. That happens from time to time. So it could be a situation like that, in which case there's no problem. The other possibility is that maybe this is, like a renegade so-called Catholic bishop. And maybe he is not in communion with the church. Now, that's something you would need to find out. Do you have any information about that?
I do not.
Okay, so you'd need to find out more about that before you say or do anything. So I've known of situations where a bishop from Mexico has family in Southern California, and he's there to visit family and to conduct other business and things like that. And while he's there, he might celebrate the sacrament of confirmation and distribute Holy Communion, say Mass, and things like that. And that's fine. That's licit. Now, typically, the bishop would let the bishop of the diocese that he's visiting know that this is going to happen. But that can be done, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing for you to object to. On the other hand, if this is somebody who's just you know, a hired gun. He's a, you know, like a rent-a-priest or something silly like that, and he's not actually in communion with the church, then yeah, stay far away from that. But in order to know, you're going to have to inquire, who is he? Where is he from? Is he an actual bishop of a diocese, for example? And really only until you know those things would you know which way to go with that. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, it does. Yeah, thank you, because I'm confident enough to ask my friend those kind of information, because it's going to be his daughter. So I'll ask him, talk to him, and, you know, I mean, this is all just so the baptism could be valid, you know, for the good of his family and for the good of the church. So, yeah, I'm going to look into it then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a tool I can recommend to you. It's called CatholicHierarchy.org. So Catholic-Hierarchy.org. And this is a website that gives you the global pedigree of all the different bishops. So you could plug in the bishop's name, or you could search for the name of the bishop. You could do it either way. You could do it by country. You could do it by diocese. You could do it by name. And so when you get the name of a bishop, lots of information here about this. You know, where was he born? Who ordained him to be a priest? Who ordained him or consecrated him to be a bishop? Where is he a bishop? Where does he serve? So there are all sorts of details in here that you can look up about any bishop. So again, it's Catholic-Hierarchy.org. Just something to know about. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, what's your call on the phone calls? What do you think? Let's go to Gary in L.A. Hello, Gary.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call, Patrick. So I had a quick question for you, and just to preface this call, I'm very much a neophyte when it comes to the realm of religious scriptures, but I've reached that age where I'm starting to, you know, have that path of self-realization or reflection, so set on a journey sort of exploring my inner self and the meaning of life in general. So my question is, when people are born, why are some people born in poverty while others are born, say, in a privileged society or aristocracy?
All right, that's a fair question, but it's one that's mysterious. I don't have an answer as to why any given person is born in that way. St. Thomas Aquinas, he, though, has a good answer for explaining it at a general level, and that is that this is God's providence. And God's providence is another way of saying this is his plan, his eternal plan for the happiness of his creatures. Now, we know from experience that not all of his creatures are happy. And when you commit sin and you turn away from God, it brings unhappiness, to say the least. So why is it that some people who never necessarily did anything wrong, because you can't do anything wrong when you're an infant, why are they born into poverty? Or why are they born into disease or some other problem that they might have? And this is a question that the Jews at the time of Jesus wrestled with. You know, Lord, whose sin is it that this man is born blind? Was it his sin or his parents' sin? They had questions like that, because they thought that physical deformities or other maladies, not to mention poverty, that those were somehow God's punishments for sin. And Jesus, every time this issue came up, he would point out that it's not his sin, nor is it the sin of his parents. This is part of God's providence. And in a way that's mysterious to us, it certainly is to me, some people are born with advantages. Now, we might say, well, that's just happenstance. That's just coincidence. It just so happens, you know, it's the luck of the draw. And you get born into a family that's wealthy or what have you. And the other guy over there, he's born into a family with no money or there's a lot of illness. It seems like happenstance to us, but it's part of God's providence. And as God's providence unfolds, we can see that the some of the reasons, at least, we can begin to kind of perceive that maybe there's a plan for this person that grew up in poverty and went on to achieve great things, or somebody who grew up with great wealth and who squandered that wealth or was morally very bad and winds up losing those things. Beyond that, I don't really know what else to say. It is a mystery. And I don't mean to say, well, we can't say anything about it because it's a mystery. What I mean is that we can only penetrate so far into that mystery. But ultimately, that's the answer. as mysterious as it is, and that is that this is God's providence, his plan. I suppose when we all get to heaven, we're going to find out, Lord, why did you do it the way you did it? But in the meantime, we trust in God and we do the best we can to live according to the circumstances that we find ourselves in, whether it's poverty or wealth or somewhere in between. I hope that's helpful. 888-914-9149. I'm just looking at the phones here. I think we can get now to Larry in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your radio station. I wanted to comment on the before when you were talking about the end times, mm-hmm. which is getting to be quite a thing out here around the world just about. But most people, I believe, think the end times means that it's the end of the world. And personally, God created this world out of pure love. Why would he destroy it? I firmly believe that the end times is a time where this era will come to an end because of the sinfulness that is happening. Is it this time? We don't know. Only God the Father knows when this will happen. Any mm-hmm. comments?
Yeah. The Bible doesn't agree with that. The Bible says, St. Peter says, that this world and all the elements in it will be dissolved with fire. It's going to be destroyed. And this is not because God doesn't love the world, but because he's going to renew the world. There will be a new heavens and a new earth, as it talks about in the book of Revelation. So right now, all of creation is groaning with anticipation for that to take place. But it will happen at some point in the future. But there's no question but that it all will be destroyed in the end. 2 Peter chapter 3 says, "But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, and then the heavens will pass away with a loud noise, and the elements will be dissolved with fire, and the earth and the works that are upon it will be burned up." And he says more or less the same thing two verses later, where he says that we're waiting for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be kindled and dissolved, and the elements will melt with fire. So those are two passages that indicate there will be a decisive conclusion to this natural creation that we live in right now, but something better is coming, and it's because God loves us that he's got something even better than we have now in store for us. You see what I mean?
Yes, thank you, Patrick. I understand very much.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to be there when that happens and the sky starts catching on fire. I don't think I want to be there to see that.
That's probably why when you do think about it, that maybe we should try not to be sinful and be loving and obedient to God.
There you go. Bingo bango, as my grandson Patrick likes to say. Bingo bango. I agree with you. And you know, if we're in heaven when that happens, then we'll be praying for the people who are going through it on the earth. So in due time, it will happen. But in the meantime, you're right. Let's just keep our eyes fixed on Jesus and be good followers of his.
I wanted to ask one more. It was just the object is that the Holy Father, Pope Francis, has given us a prayer to say during this during the pandemic we have. And he indicated to say this prayer, which when you say these prayers, it is a indulgence. It's a not a partial, but it is a
plenary
indulgence. Thank you for that help. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if we could use that same prayer for the holy souls in purgatory for their indulgence to get the
yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we talk about suffrages for the holy souls. A suffrage doesn't mean suffering for them. It means that you elect that God would offer your prayers for them. So, yeah, you can definitely do that.
Very good. I was curious. I did ask a priest one time in confession about it, and he did definitely said yes, so I just wanted to keep asking. It's like, three times you're out, or three times you get a home run.
So, but
all right. Yeah. Well, you took us to the end of the show today. I appreciate that, Larry. Thank you. Hey, have the cruise ship started sailing yet out of Fort Lauderdale?
I missed that. What'd you say?
Oh, well, you're in Fort Lauderdale. I wondered if you've noticed whether or not the cruise industry has started up again.
I haven't heard lately. Usually we'll get advertisements coming through about it, and so far we have not. Now, yeah. I think our governor, DeSantis, is definitely thinking to do it, but I believe there might be from the federal government being a sticky about it. But, you know, the state sometimes does what they want. So we'll see what happens. Maybe by this summer it could be. Maybe by the fall, which is the biggest time of the season they have for going on cruises. So we'll find out.
Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. Well, we're at the end of the program. This is the end of the line, as they say. But I look forward to being with you again very soon right here on the Patrick Madrid Show. Keep in mind, you can catch up on anything you might have missed at relevantradio.com/Patrick. All the shows are archived and also handy to get to on your Relevant Radio app. Well, between now and then, I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.